We're talking now with Debbie Critchfield. She's a Republican candidate for Idaho State Superintendent of Public Instruction. Debbie, thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So you're currently in Sandpoint as we speak, and we're recording this. So we're taping this interview in person, which is not something we were able to do during much of the pandemic.
That's Yay, nice. For in person anything.
The position you're going for is currently held by Sherry Ibarra, I think you pronounce her that way, and she hasn't yet filed, but it's likely she will. There's another former state legislator that's filed for the Republican primary, Brandon Dursk. Now, there's no election until the primary rolls around next May, so we have time for voters to get educated on who the candidates are. Now, I don't know much about your background. This is my first question, but I do know you were appointed to the State Board of Education in 2014, and that you served as president from April of 2019 until just last month, and I presume you stepped down to pursue this.
So stepped down as president, and then I'm still on the Board of Education until the governor finds a replacement for me, which I believe that they are in the works to do that.
Okay.
So didn't want to leave a vacancy there.
Sure. Well, tell us more about your background.
I am a resident of the town, I would say a city, but it's not a city, the town of Oakley. And it is 20 miles south of Burley, for those that maybe haven't heard of it. My husband and I farm there, and we have four children, three of which are married, and then we've got a grandson. My education background, I started off actually as a substitute teacher at my local high school. I enjoyed working with youth in the area, and as I got more involved in the county educational system, became aware of a number of things that I didn't think added up. And so the next thing, which was I ran for my local school board and served as a trustee in my county for 10 years, half of which were as chair, which provided a great leadership opportunity as well as a learning opportunity to know more fully about the operational side of a school district.
Can I ask, how big is that school district?
5,600 students. We are geographically square miles the size of Delaware. We've got 17 schools total, but we've got five very distinct communities. And so I understand how an individual school, how vital that is to a community. After a couple of years, 10 years was a good run, and I had some health concerns. I actually had cancer, and took some time off to become well. And after that, then I was appointed to, as you mentioned, the State Board of Education in 2014. And so it's been such a satisfying experience for me and journey in education, to the point that for many years I have considered a run for the state superintendent job. And this last year really propelled me. And I really feel an urgency when it comes to student outcomes and to how we as taxpayers fund education. And I really want to restore a value to our educational system in a way that we've got a champion for what we're doing in our state.
Mm-hmm. You just answered my next question. Why did you decide to run?
But, I read your mind.
Yes.
there's a little bit more to it, but keep going.
Okay. What do you identify as major issues that you think voters should be paying attention to as they evaluate the candidates?
Well, I think that you're going to see some clear distinctions of leadership style. And I guess I don't want to take my time going into what other people's leadership styles are, but one thing that I would point out, a commonality between the other two, is I'm not exactly sure where the gentleman's been in education. Never seen him. I've been involved in education in the state for 17 years, and I would give that same assessment to our current person as far as presence, engagement, etc. As I sat at the State Board of Education table and have observed how the Department of Education has functioned, I have been discouraged, like many school districts, in the ability to support them in their needs. And I'm not talking about micromanaging style, but there is a role for the state, particularly when it comes to budgeting. The two biggest things that our school districts spend their time on are reporting and on teacher certification. And there are a number of inadequacies that come in the support. But, you know, that I guess that's the school side. And your question really was, you know, what do we pay attention to as voters? And I think the number one Well, there's probably a tie for a lot of number ones. Right now, we've heard a lot of talk about curriculum and critical race theory and other ideologies that, that parents would be uncomfortable with, particularly where minors are concerned. And I have a lot of thoughts. I've given a lot of consideration on how that is that we address curriculum as a function of a local board. However, the state has a responsibility to help guide how districts make those decisions. And one of the issues that, that I have seen and heard talked about when it comes to curriculum, pardon me, as school districts make their decisions, they involve parents and the community. Most of our school districts in the state are far behind on new curriculum adoptions and are using textbooks that are outdated, which causes teachers and others associated in the system to go online or to go find other resources that may or may not have been approved by a board. And so when we hear these stories of, well, the school board didn't approve it through their formal process, yet we find it in the classroom, when you really start to trace and understand what that issue is, we need to address how districts, first of all, go about their process, and then, of course, the budgeting to support that. And I think that the overall budgeting issue is one of significance. We need to be more targeted and strategic in the monies that we use, and a budget review needs to take place regularly. Are we getting the ROI that we would expect with this amount of investment? With over $2 billion going into education from the state, the position of state superintendent becomes a very critical piece to overall state priorities and long-term viability when it comes to our economy. And we need to have a clear plan from the top, alignment throughout the system, and let our districts know here's the target and here's where we want to be, and have a person that can unite all of those that are interested in at the state level in student outcomes, and that takes in the legislature and others and work towards that end.
Well, let's talk about budget for just a second. It is the largest piece of the state budget.
I think health and welfare eclipsed education this year,
okay.
I believe. But nonetheless,
okay.
It's been right there.
Big chunk of it.
Yeah.
Yet Idaho is consistently ranked at lowest or almost lowest in our per pupil expense. So how do you reconcile those two things? We're spending a lot of our budget there, but yet we're far behind other states.
Well, I think when we also take into consideration the perspective that as a state, we're not overly taxed. And so as a percentage of the overall budget, to your point, there is a significant investment there. And yet districts are still going to their local taxpayers and asking for more to be able to supplement that. There are and can be a lot of ways to alleviate that pressure so that school districts don't have to go into their local communities. I think when we look at line items and things that are overly prescriptive for school districts that may or may not be working and allow them to have more local decision making within their budget, they can be more competitive with salaries, they can handle more of the deferred maintenance issues, and other things that are reflective of what's going on in a local community. But when you have 85 to 87% of your budget tied up in salaries and benefits, and then you add in utilities, technology, transportation, you know, all of those things, we're talking about a very small sliver of money that districts can actually decide this is the direction we want to go. And I think, again, the role of the state is to set the goals and the objectives and support the efforts to get those jobs done at the local level.
But should the state be putting in more money into education?
Well,
even if that means adjusting our tax structure so there is more money to put in.
This, to me, it's a yes and a no. There are areas where we absolutely need to have greater investment, and I would look at the facilities issues. I think it's one of the most challenging and complex issues for a school district to deal with, how they deal with deferred maintenance and new facilities. So yes, in that case. And in other ways, I want to say no, because it's a budgeting review that needs to take place. Do we need to shift it? I certainly wouldn't say, well, we don't need this $5 million over here. Let's give it back to the state. What we need to do is shift that to the priority places.
Well, looking at our local school district, the Lake Pend Oreille School District, after 20 years of passing supplemental levies to make their budget work and getting nice amount of a nice margin in approval of those, they passed a permanent levy a couple years ago. But it's leaving unanswered how we're going to fix our facilities. And that's a whole nother thing that this school district may need to come back to the taxpayers and ask for. And they've done it. They've done that once, and the taxpayers said no. But we do have buildings that are in critical need of either being remodeled or actually being torn down and replaced. Is there a way the state can help with that?
The first place to start is to actually have the state, I'd say that in quotation marks, start talking about it. Facility maintenance and building has been a function of the local school district for a very long time. The state says once you have your building, we'll partially help you maintain it and we'll provide money to pay for the teacher and, you know, some of these other things. But everything else has been left to a local community. And as you've pointed out, that the shift has caused a tremendous burden on local taxpayers, not to mention the fatigue of repeatedly being asked to support a variety of things, from aging buildings to addressing enrollment growth and shifts from one parts of a town to another. And this is not unique to Sandpoint or anywhere in the north. This has been a consistent message that I've heard over time and while I was a board member. And I think that we mistakenly look and say, and you'll hear this as a solution, well, if we were able to lower the 66% voter approval rate, then people would come forward to support bonds. And I don't agree with that. In fact, I reject that as the solution. What we need to be looking at is the long-term sustainable fix so that school districts do not have to go into their local communities and repeatedly ask.
And that burden falls on property tax
absolutely
payers. So maybe changing the whole
absolutely
and
I'm not going to say that I can go through here are the seven steps to get us there, but what I can say that the and where I started, the very critical step is to first acknowledge that this is a priority issue around our states for our taxpayers and for our school districts, and that we need to have that conversation. We've had a ton of money infused through federal stimulus. We have an $800 million budget surplus in the state. It's time for us to start looking at how we help support the facility needs in our areas.
I want to circle back to one of the big cultural hot button issues, which is critical race theory. You talked about that a little bit. The legislature this year passed restrictions on teaching this theory, which to me is confusing. Because does that mean that our teachers should not be teaching anything about race? And how do you teach about the Civil War without addressing that? What's your take on what the legislature did this year? Are you behind that? Or do you think that the legislature really needs to leave educators to decide these sorts of things, or the local school districts to decide these things?
So I'm hearing three parts to your question, and I'll start with the first one. So I was at the table and a part of the early conversations when House Bill 377 was created and then later went through the legislature, signed by the governor. And I'm going to just add one little tiny tweak to what you said. The law itself does not prohibit the teaching of critical race theory. What it does is prohibit any type of biased or prejudiced instruction towards that. And I think that that's where we want to be. We want to teach kids how to think, not what to think. And I certainly am not supportive of anything that's divisive within our communities. Now, getting to the second part of the question, how does that limit or diminish what historical subjects that we need to talk about? It shouldn't. And we need to have those full conversations in our classrooms when we talk about the Civil War. And near me, there is in Issiqua, there is a Japanese internment camp. We want to be able to have these types of conversations that lead students to, with their values, with what they learn at home, and with what you combine the information. We want to have an environment where there's no, it's just not leading people to a certain ideology. And I think to have the law state that, it is important. And we want to make sure that teachers aren't fearful of having the conversations that they need to have. Okay, now I got to think about your third question on, what was the third one? I think you answered the main question there.
But I don't know how teachers approach that. And first of all, how do you even define critical race theory? Because I've seen that defined different ways. It seems to me it has to deal with the fact or the question that there's been systemic racism in our country.
Well, and I think when where I don't want to come from it, and I haven't talked to, well, first of all, I'm not for indoctrination of any sort. But when we look at critical race theory, approaching historical events and talking about them factually, this is what happened, but not coming at it from a point that today I'm an oppressor because I am a white person, and therefore I carry with me personally, or that our society is responsible for something that, you know, that happened back then. Leading students to these types of conclusions is inappropriate. We want to be able to present the information in a full way. And I think for teachers, part of their training and continued support in the classroom, whether it's critical race theory or anything else, is that you're there to facilitate conversation, to present information, and help students to think critically about it, not how you think about it, or predispose that because you're this way, therefore, you know, you've done something wrong.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we only have a couple minutes left. You talked about a couple issues. What would you do differently from the current superintendent?
We only have a couple minutes. It's a long list. But first and foremost, you know, I want to be a champion for education. I know that when there's been administrative changes at the state level, many school districts and others felt that education, the state was had interjected itself too heavily, and that local districts weren't able to navigate and make their own decisions. My observation over the last 7 years has been a complete pendulum swing to completely absent, and someone that's not out in front of the issues and talking about any of the things that we're talking about, and 100 others more. And so I think being out in front of things, accessible. One of my strengths is to be able to work with people, having conversations that we need to have in the state, leading those conversations and working with stakeholders that care, bringing that parent voice in. And I guess the simplest way to say it for me is leadership. There's been a void in leadership over the last 7 years. We felt it. Our achievement scores, our graduation rates are not where they need to be. They haven't moved. And everyone just feels flat about education. And that's where I want to jump in and day one be ready to go.
Okay, Debbie Critchfield, how do people find out more about you?
I have a website, debbie4idaho.com. I am social media. You can find me on there, Debbie for Idaho Students. And I hope people will reach out. And if you have other questions or want to know more, I'm going around the state. I'm very serious. I love Idaho, and I want to help kids. And that's my focus.
Mm. Well, Debbie Critchfield, Republican candidate for Idaho State Superintendent of Public Instruction. Thanks for talking with us today.
Thank you.